Hey, it's Kenny here. At the end of the year, we typically like to post some episodes that aren't our normal types and end up being quite fun. However, this year we launched a second podcast called Behind the Pursuit. And this new podcast releases every 2 weeks that covers the topics of sourcing, forecasting, brand loyalty, raw materials, work-life balance, and so much more. This is a creative outlet for us to talk about what it takes to build a bourbon brand. And in this episode of 22 of Behind the Pursuit, we talk about our journeys visiting multiple states and brand loyalty. So we ask ourselves, do bourbon geeks have brand loyalty? And if you do own a brand, how do you build that brand loyalty to a general consumer? Make sure you subscribe to Behind the Pursuit on your favorite podcast player and hit the subscribe button to listen to more of these episodes. Cheers, everyone.
It's that time again to get bourbon strong with Give270. Purchase your $50 tickets for your chance to win from our 50 bourbon prizes. Don't miss out on rare bottles and grand prizes like the legendary Pappy Set, a Weller Rainbow, and the Blood Oath Trilogy. Hurry, only 3,000 tickets are available. Single bottle winners go back in for the grand prize draw. Will you win the ultimate Pappy Set or one of our other incredible prizes? Get your tickets now at Give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 000273.
It's that time of the year where everybody's starting to make their vacation plans on visiting Kentucky, the mecca of bourbon. And if you are coming to Kentucky, you need to make sure you visit us at Pursuit Spirits in Louisville. We're right in the heart of Clifton, near Butchertown and Nulu, and only just a few miles away from downtown Louisville. But when you do come, you need to book your experience to go do our whole shebang. This is the one that's really the star of the show. You get a full-on tasting. You get to do your own personal barrel selection experience. And you get to grab a whiskey thief and fill your bottle directly from the barrel. We're doing something completely brand new that nobody else is doing here in bourbon country. Plus, you get a free sweet tasting glass at the end of it. I guarantee you, you're going to end up being one of the many people that's also leaving us a 5-star review. So make sure you come and check us out. You can book your reservation by going to pursuitspirits.com and clicking the Visit Us button. From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixir's Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com.
Hey everybody, once again, welcome back to another episode of Behind the Pursuit. From bourbon to brand, however you found us, we're so glad you're here as we get behind the scenes with the Pursuit Spirits brand. I'm your host, Brian Bikey, and joining me again, the band is back. We have Kenny and Ryan joining us on the show tonight.
Is Ryan the lead singer?
If the band's not me.
I just play a mean triangle. That's what I can do.
I'll take drums or backs. I can't be a lead singer.
All right. Somebody's got to be a guitarist.
You've seen me at karaoke, you know.
You're right.
Tiffany can be the lead singer. I'll be backup to her. She likes it. Yeah.
You're definitely in the background just going, yeah.
That's right. I can't read words, so
they're scrolling too fast for you, buddy.
Exactly.
Well, we did catch a break in between all of your all's traveling. Actually, Ryan, recently, you visited our partners at Sagamore. Can you talk about that a little bit?
The last time Kenny and I went to Sagamore, we had an incredible time, and it's a beautiful facility, awesome staff, team that we're so fortunate to be able to work with. And, you know, went up there. It's been about a year and a half, I guess, since we had been. And just kind of say hey and see what's going on, talk to the team, actually trying some different mash bills and some different things. And then also, too, they invite us to come see the Ravens play the Bills, which was pretty cool. My father-in-law is a huge Lamar Jackson fan who went to University of Louisville. And Brian and them were gracious enough to say, hey, next time you come up, let's take you to the game. So we went and spent a day at the distillery on Saturday, hung out at the Pendry, which is a Sagamore hotel as well. Had like 7 too many Sagamore old fashions. you have, if you're in the Baltimore area, you got to go to the Sagamore Pendry, the distillery. Fantastic team. They really are, I mean, just knocking out of the park. I mean, it's, I was tasting some of their different mash bills and just different things they got going on. And I mean, their distilling team, I mean, for how young they are, they really got it dialed in. And I'm just super thankful we get to work with them and still excited for their future and our future together. So we just signed a lifetime contract with them. We're blood, you know, in blood with them. So we're excited to be with them. And yeah, I had a great trip. I'm really tired because I had a great time there.
Kind of jealous. I miss going to Baltimore. It looked like it was a good time.
I know, because the last time we were in Baltimore, I mean, I wasn't there much longer. I think I was there 36 hours today. Then the last time we were there was only like 24 hours. And so we got to do like a 3-day thing or something one of these days.
Kenny, you've been on the road. How are things going with you?
You know, getting some Marriott points, getting some enterprise rental car points. I guess you could say that's the positive out of it. No, actually, it's all been positive. It's one of those things that, you know, it's a lot harder to do this than I thought it was going to be. Not to say it's hard to just drive around and shake hands and sign bottles. That's not hard. It's making sure that you're taking the time away from the other obligations that you need to be doing to make sure that you're making this a success. I mean, that's kind of the hardest part right now, is understanding that, you know, we can't live on the podcast alone. We've got to make sure that we go out, we work the market, we have to be good compadres to our distributors and everything like that. It's constant marketing. That's kind of what we're realizing, and is that this game is, it doesn't just sit still, is that you have to be constantly in the face of the consumer. You have to be constantly doing something to help push and promote your bottles, whether that's, you know, point of sale, whether you have somebody in the store doing tastings for you or something like that. But part of this is to say that, you know, what have I been up to? Yeah, I did my trip to Ohio. We've got Chicago coming up here next week, Tennessee the week after that. And so I'm really excited to kind of just, again, meet more people. It is a little surreal to sit there and show up at a store, and then all of a sudden there's 10 people waiting in line to sit there and buy a bottle from you and shake your hand and get it signed by you. I mean, I'm just glad that the pen we got, there was a lot of research that went into figuring out the exact pen. But the pen, the pen is very forgiving to actually make a really cool looking signature. It looks like garbage if I write my signature on a piece of paper, but that pen that we got, it looks pretty snazzy on our black label. So I'm kind of excited about that. But like I said, it's forgiving with that, but it's just been a really good opportunity so far to be able to just meet a lot of listeners out there, meet fans of the show. I'm just glad that they like the whiskey. I think that makes it 10 times better. And it's just one of those things that we have to keep going back and making sure that, you know, the people that listen to us, they are definitely the bourbon enthusiasts. They are the hardcore whiskey consumer. And if you do like it, you know, the best way to kind of get everybody else on board is you got to share it with them. You got to teach them and show them the way that United is, it's not just another 4 to 5 year old whiskey, right? I mean, I feel that what we're doing out, it competes with a lot of the big boys. It competes with a lot of the other brands that are also in the 4 to 6 year old category, that the same exact price point. And I think we're putting out a superior product. And I'm just excited to be able to grow that brand and continue to put the word out there.
We're still trying to, I think we got our pitch down, you know, our elevator pitch down, dialed in. It's you know, at first it used to take an hour to explain it, and now we got it down to about, you know, 3 to 4 minutes. But it's been fun and challenging. You know, we thought we had a great platform with the podcast, which we do, but, you know, we've quickly realized that that's only going to get you so far. And even, you know, I think we talked about, even our diehard fans still don't really trust us to buy a 4 or 5 year old whiskey. And, you know, is that education, getting liquid to lips, getting it in front of consumers. Kenny has done a fantastic job with that in Ohio. Continue that in Tennessee. We had a great outing showing at, you know, well, we've done 3 events here in Louisville now, or 2 or 3. So that was nice to be back in our...
Oh yeah, in Doc's Bourbon Room. Shout out for that one.
Yeah, John Shoemaker helped us get that going. And that was the opening thing to me. It was like, on a Monday night, how many people are roaming around Main Street downtown Louisville, you know, just looking for bourbon stuff to do and great food and whiskey. And we met a lot of great people. We had somebody come from, well, they didn't come from Korea to meet us, but they were having to be there from Korea, which was very cool. Yeah, it's just been a fun, challenging learning experience about how do you build a whiskey brand. You know, you kind of, as a whiskey geek, you take for granted all the grinding and hard work. It's not just having a good product. It's also getting out there, sharing your story, connecting with individuals, and hopefully getting them to share your story as well.
There's no field of dreams, is there?
No, it's not. If you just bottle it, they'll come. No, it's been fun. So Kenny's going to Tennessee next week, and I'm going to stop in Knoxville and then Texas. Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of cool things. And I think that's one thing that we're going to know is that this is not going to be something that we just do once and it's done. I think we'll be able to do a few of these throughout the year and kind of scatter them around and stuff like that and kind of just make market visits and whatnot. So excited to be able to do more of these in the future too.
On the topic of this, really, and as it pertains to brand and coming off of the brand recognition topic that we did several episodes back, we had a question from listener Steve to the podcast, and he wanted us to talk about the thought of brand loyalty. And so this actually is really good. I think this is really interesting coming off of, if you listen to the last episode that we had with Jay West, we were talking about whether or not the general consumer these days, if they have brand loyalty and what that looks like for them nowadays. So it's an interesting topic kind of saying, is the consumer leaning that way, or what things can we do and outside of bourbon? You know, what do we do? Are there brands that we stay loyal to? So we're just going to kind of dive into brand loyalty in general. And I'll start the topic off really with the question of, you know, how do companies, whether they're bourbon related or otherwise, nowadays, maybe even a history, you know, how have they been successful creating and maintaining brand loyalty? And where do you all think we presently are or are going in regards to how companies are doing it successfully or will need to maybe pivot in order to be successful maintaining that brand loyalty?
Well, I'll kind of kick this off, and it is a double-edged sword when I think about this. And if I have to lean one way or the other, and by the way, I also want to say that Steve Breen, the one that made this particular question, he is definitely brand loyal to us. I love Steve. Steve's a great guy. So cheers, Steve. Thanks for putting that out there for us. But if I had to lean one way or another, I'm going to say that most consumers aren't brand loyal. Most consumers today are always chasing the shiny red ball. It doesn't matter where it comes from. If somebody comes out and it's a double digit something, if it's from Heaven's Door, if it's from Four Roses, if it's from name any other 60 different distilleries, if it's a double digit something, people are just going to go ahead and shift and move focus to somewhere else. I think you do have some people that are enthusiasts to the point where they don't, it's not to say that they're not loyal, that they're just like, oh, like I don't care about this brand anymore. They'll join the Facebook group, you know, like Bill and Bob, they have the Four Gate Whiskey group in there. And there will be people that consistently post stuff about Four Gate Whiskey. Are they brand loyal? I don't know if they're brand loyal. They're brand curious, I think is the way to kind of look at that. And you know, they'll go out, but I'm not going to say that they're going to, every person in there is going to drop money on every single Four Gate release, much less to say, I don't think there's not going to be the vast majority of people that have bought a bottle of Pursuit United will buy every single release of Pursuit United, even though I hope you would, because we want to make things a little bit different. But there will be some people that will be brand loyal. So I'd say for the vast majority of people, they aren't, only because there are people that want to just chase the next thing. You want to, and this is just from a pure bourbon enthusiast perspective, is that most consumers nowadays, they want a garden variety. They want a potpourri, if you will, of types of whiskeys, like just a bunch of different stuff. And you can't be brand loyal with doing that. As much as it is to cool to see, you know, somebody's, you know, shelf on the wall and they've got 40 different store picks of Weller 107, that's great and all. Does that make you brand loyal? Does that just make you chasing after something? I'm not too concerned with some folks like that. I think that there's the majority of people out there, they'll have maybe one or two bottles of something. They'll have one or two bottles of something else. And so they're consistently trying to try a lot of different things. So that's the way I'd kind of initially lean. The second part of your question is, you know, what can people do, or how can brands start establishing and figuring out, like, how does brand loyalty start, how do you build that? How do you build that trust with your consumer? And this is a very tough question, because when you're continually, as I had mentioned at the very top of the show, you're continually fighting for attention in this space. You're continually fighting to make sure that you are top of mind of somebody else. You are submitting to award shows and competitions, and you're like, oh, we got a gold medal for this and that. And so you're just constantly just putting stuff out there just to put stuff out there. I will say that you have to do something that is going to make a lasting impression on somebody. And it's really hard to create brand loyalty off of one bottle. I don't think that's possible. The only way I think you create brand loyalty is by experience. And whether that's a one-on-one scenario, whether that's going on me traveling to all these different places and I get to meet somebody, and I'm not going to say I'm taking it for granted that I'm meeting 100 people as I'm doing this, but maybe to that one person, me spending 3 or 4 minutes sitting and talking to them about what they're going with, what they're doing, the whiskey, who they shared it with, how they learn about the podcast, you know, what do they think of it? That could actually mean something. That could mean something where they are, you know, finding that as a real value to them, because all of a sudden they have that experience. They have that one-on-one interaction with me, with somebody that is a front and center of the company. And so at that point, maybe that's something that does start establishing that brand loyalty. I will say one of the best ways that I've seen brand loyalty be established that continues to run to this day is the folks from Smooth Ambler. They run Drambledree, whatever it's called. Basically, it's a weekend that they invite, you know, 100, 150 of their closest people that like to come in from out of town. They have a single barrel selection that gets done. They do fishing or tasting samples. It's kind of analogous to what we did with Pursuit Palooza. You know, it's one of those very personable type of experiences that will help you drive a little bit closer connection with that brand. And hopefully that's something that I think that we could try to build on as well, is that everything is going to be more experiential. Don't get me wrong. You can build brand loyalty if you have like one solid knockout of like home run of a product. And it's like, oh wait, they've been coming out with 16-year-old bourbon every single time. I would say that, you know what? I'll take it back. I feel like I'm flip flopping here. I will say that one brand that I feel that has done very good at brand loyalty with just their whiskey alone is Old Carter. I think they're doing a fantastic job. You see people all the time, they're posting about it. They go and they collect a bunch of it. They have it in their backdrop. Mark and Sherry Carter are great people. They're probably always out, but I guarantee you they probably have not been able to shake and do that one-on-one experience with every single one of those people. So there is it's a very rare circumstance that you build it just off the whiskey alone. However, to be able to build that brand loyalty, it has to be some sort of experiential type of treatment.
I'm going to disagree with Kenny on all the everything.
on all the above.
So, you know, there's two kinds of consumers. There's the whiskey geek who does not, like Kenny talks about, does not have brand loyalty, and they're constantly chasing, you know, the same thing. But within the whiskey geek, they do have brand loyalty, I think. At least I've noticed this. Like, I've noticed even though whiskey geeks will chase everything, like Brian, for instance, he is like Mr. Diehard Four Roses. Like, no matter what they're going to put out. Same thing with like Russell's. You know, some people are just like, I mean, hell, you got somebody with a Rare Bird who has a, you know, following over one brand. Whiskey geeks, while they do chase everything, I do think they have one brand that they kind of latch on to. For me, like, I'm always, my heart's going to be always with Heaven Hill products. Even though I love trying new things, I'm always going to go back to, you know, a Heaven Hill type of product, even though now I'm mostly just drinking what we have and whatever we're working on. That's going to be my brand loyalty. But I just look at my friends and I have some friends that will strictly just buy 175s of Old Forester no matter what. That's all. And they're like, you know, you can put me this in bourbon, that, you know, I'm going to drink Old Fo no matter what. Or same thing with Maker's Mark. You know, they're buying liters of handles of Maker's Mark, you know, always. Maker's did that, was one of the, kind of the first brands to kind of really latch on to, like, to me anyways, trying to build that brand loyalty and try to create connection and something unique with, you know, the ambassador program. They were kind of one of the first ones to do that, you know, with the wax coasters, and we make fun of that now. But Maker's, when I was, you know, getting into this, was like, okay, I'm I'm drinking the high dollar stuff, and I got a wax coaster. I'm wearing a Maker's t-shirt. I feel pretty cool. Something that I can connect to the brand. And so I don't know how you, it's a pretty crowded market right now. And how do you build? Yes, you want, you know, people chasing, you know, your cool, rare, one-off stuffs, because those people are always going to be interested in that. Whiskey geeks anyways, because we're always like, but how do you build, you know, that consistent where they're like, okay, this is something that I can latch onto and drink multiple times a week, not just like one time, you know, get a fancy bottle because it's a LTO or whatnot. You know, like, Brian, why did Four Roses, why do you choose that? Was it simply just the flavors? Was it barrel picks? You know, why did you latch onto that?
Interesting question. I think as a whiskey geek and into what Kenny was saying too, you know, I've tried a lot of things, but I think in that too, I don't think the diversity of all this and that on my shelf has ever been the big thing. Like I want to make sure that whiskey that I have is whiskey that I want to drink, but also to something that Kenny was mentioning about the experiential part, you know, I think part of it is because as a brand, I've seen Four Roses do a lot of, you know, through their Mellow Moments Club, they have these events that they'll do lotteries for, and not just for a bottle release, but for when they came out with the small batch select, or this is just a dinner that we do at Father's Day, or all these sorts of things. So I think it felt like the extent to which they go out of their way in those regards was kind of like Maker's Mark does. So I think they're one of the brands that I see do that as well, or close to as well as Maker's Mark. And then just hitting in the flavor profile that I like. I feel like it's pretty cheap, barrel strength, aged whiskey that's better than the $10 a year rule that we used to see. And when I first started getting into them, they were a lot easier to find around town than they are now. Pretty accessible, hits the flavor point. And then kind of even more slightly emotional with that, it's just something that I was able to do some events that, and things I was able to do with my dad. And so I, you know, it was just kind of one of these brands that I'm like, you know, this just kind of brings everything home. He was into whiskey before I got into whiskey. We both kind of got into whiskey. It's one of these kind of ways that we were both able to kind of bond together. And so it's kind of always held a special place as something that we both kind of connected on, which is a little different than the experiential part that you mentioned. But yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of different variants, and especially Ryan, what you were mentioning, where there's a lot of competition. There is something to be said to not have to fight with all the other allocated drops that are coming out all the time and having to keep up with everything that's going on and chasing that down. How are you going to find it? Or you have to do X, Y, and Z with the store. You have to, you know, follow this truck around or pay this amount of money. It's nice to just be like, you know what? This particular product's going to have variants to a little bit of a degree, mean that every bottle I get will have something a little bit different, and that's enjoyable while still staying kind of similar in profile.
With Four Roses, for example, and you know, I know you're big into their single barrels, but has that like got you to buy like say like a small batch select, or you know, any of the like I guess more available everyday items of theirs?
If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon. The farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's P-L-U-S.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone. Transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/bourbon.
I know you're big into their single barrels, but has that like got you to buy like say like a small batch select or, you know, any of the like, I guess, more available everyday items of theirs, or are you strictly just like barrel picks and whatnot?
Are you crushing Yellow Label every week? That's the question.
Well, not even Yellow Label, but like small batch select or small batch, you know.
Yeah, when it first came out, I thought that small batch select was kind of like this middle ground from regular everyday kind of shelfer stuff to limited edition. It's still a little on the youthful side, but there are some nuances about it that I feel like are a little bit more similar to how at least Brent Elliott presently blends stuff for the limited editions. But I still think that the small batch select and the regular single barrel that you get in the store are pretty good values for what's there on the shelf. The single barrel specifically, just the 100 proofer, that's usually would be in one of my lists that I would give people to say, hey, you should check this out. I don't know that you'll learn if you like Four Roses profile based on that, because that's a weird thing about their brand specifically, is I don't think their regular mainstay products really showcase what they could do all that well. They're, you know, a lot of people are like, I don't like Four Roses. And I'm like, well, I kind of don't blame you. You know, Yellow Label's a little unassuming, and the other products are, you know, kind of specific too. So, but I would say small batch select and single barrel, yeah, I pick those up if I need to, or to go to an event or to use for a cocktail. The single barrel specifically, because I like something that's at least, you know, 100 proof or bottled in bond or something for making cocktails with.
You made a good point, and it kind of reminds me of before the whiskey bug really bit me. And if you're listening to a whiskey podcast, do you have to think about a few years before you started listening to us and before you really got into this is what did you do? Me personally, I was buying Kentucky Tavern, went up to Very Old Barton when I had the 6-year age statement. Then I moved and I would splurge on Four Roses small batch. Like that was my thing. I mean, that was my post-grad sort of go-to. I was just had the same 2 or 3 bottles all the time, and that's what I would roll through until I started venturing out and getting, you know, an Eagle Rare and a Rock Hill Farm and some other things. And that was back then. I didn't even know that was all made by the same company. This was me just kind of looking at what's on the shelf and, oh, that's got a pretty horse. That's got an eagle on it. That's pretty cool. Let's go ahead and drink that. So at some point, you kind of just
sound like the consumers now.
I pretty much. Yeah. Well, wait, I could collect all the letters? Heck yeah, I'm in. I mean, I think that's one of those things that if you get burned the first time, I remember my first bottle of Rock Hill Farm that I ever got, it took me over probably 2 years to finish it off because it was terrible. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I've never liked it ever.
And I wrote it off forever. And so that was one of the things, is that I immediately became a not brand loyal to Rock Hill Farms, not knowing that it was even from Sazerac at the time, but I just said, like, I'm not going to drink this ever again. But I still kind of ventured off into Eagle Rare territory and some other things. So I don't know. I kind of see that if you are getting into this and you find a product at the right point, right price point, and it doesn't burn you, that you become a little brand loyal to it until, I guess, the exploration bug kind of really rears its head and says, like, you know, go try something else. Back to your question earlier, or Ron, your remark earlier about Maker's Mark. When I think about brand loyalty and Maker's Mark, yes, they did a lot of good things at the brand ambassador side of the world and being able to create something that you became a part and you became somebody that could be an ambassador of the brand. But even before then, people were still picking up Maker's Mark, and people thought, you know, it was the high class, and a lot of this was because of marketing. They had fantastic marketing. Today they still have fantastic marketing, and one of those old timey marketing newspaper ads actually had a bottle of Maker's Mark on it and says, it tastes expensive because it is, even though it really wasn't that expensive. So do you think that you can build brand loyalty just off of good marketing?
Ugh, I don't know if any more, because I mean, there's so much coming at you from a consumer side. I mean, you're getting, I mean, my Facebook feeds, my Instagram are just like marketing, you know, it's like there's so much noise that you just kind of ignore it all. It really takes like a connection, like an intimate moment. Like for me, I was like, if it ain't from Bardstown, I ain't drinking it, you know, back in the day. And so, like, I would shun off, like, Russell's and Four Roses and this and that, even though my grandfather worked there. But he worked, you know, when it was Seagram's a long time ago. But anyways, but what got me to, like, try Russell's was I was at a liquor barn and Jimmy Russell was there pouring Russell's Reserve and got to talk to him for, like, 10 minutes. And then I was like, oh, that was the first time I ever drank Russell's Reserve, you know. And I didn't know it could be, I didn't know turkey could taste like that, you know, and it was just that connection and it got me, okay, now I'm interested in this and looking at single barrel picks and this and that. And then we got to do our own and then you go hang out with Eddie in the warehouse and Bruce. And now you're like, okay, this is, I'm not like Rare Bird or anything, but I'm a huge Russell's fan because of that initial, you know, just meeting Jimmy at a liquor store and liquor barn. And there was like maybe three people there, you know, talking to him. It wasn't like he was this like sitting in a rocker chair, people coming up talking to him. You know, this is the anomaly with some brands that I'm like trying to figure out because they don't really have, you know, like Smoke Wagon, which has a great following and they don't do barrel picks. Not really that many, you know, they used to do some, but you know, it's just this small batch, uncut, unfiltered, you know, and Aaron's does a fantastic job at Instagram and marketing, and I don't care how many A, B, C, D, E, F, G's of uncut, unfiltered. It's MGP, 5-6 year MGP blended together, but and I'm not knocking it. He sells the shit out of it. And it's like, I'm trying to like understand, like, okay, that is all marketing selling that stuff, you know? And so I think you can have it both ways. I guess he's just a great storyteller and good connection person.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, do you think you can build it on marketing alone? I mean, obviously you have to have good product and Smoke Wagon has a great product. It's very good when you try it. I mean,
it's good. Well, I feel that Smoke Wagon, they were a product of the MGP chase of a few years ago. They were ones that, you know, you look at like what happened to Blom Brothers and a few other ones that as
okay,
everybody...
and Smooth Ambler whenever I...
Yeah, when Smooth Ambler, I mean, Smooth Ambler was probably the original, right? Smooth Ambler was the original where you could go and you could get 10 to 14-year-old single barrels of MGP 36% and people were just swooping them up left and right because all of a sudden... MGP wasn't a dirty word anymore. Everybody kind of really loved it. Everybody latched onto it. And as soon as what happened, Smooth Ambler got depleted, then people started fanning out and figuring out, okay, who else has got this stuff? And so they went and basically just tapped dry every single distillery that was out there. And every single distillery that had any aged product, eight and older, basically got, you know, ransacked. Good for them because they sold everything really quickly, which is fantastic. But Smoke Wagon was the only one that still had more MGP barrels in its arsenal. Granted, they weren't the same 10 to 12 years that they used to have, but now they're down to 5 and 6 years. But it's something that they were still continually able to keep up with the existing demand. And so all of the, and then again, this is just theory, all the original chasers, the one that started this whole hype of, you know, basically depleting everything with these old age stocks, they got everything that they needed and got out. But now this new wave of people came in and they didn't know that the other people got out of it. So people are still thinking that they're chasing all the old stuff. Again, just a theory that they think that they're chasing the, you know, the things that people were chasing a few years ago. But again, not trying to knock the juice or anything like that. That's just a theory on consumer behavior.
Well, no, it is hard. It is challenging from a brand perspective. Like you want the whiskey geeks to embrace you but they've proven time and time again, they'll suck you dry and then leave you. You know, as soon as you're out of what they want, there is no loyalty. They just move on to the next hype. And so it's like, how do you as a brand, like, you know, you want to appeal to them, but you want them to hang around too.
And maybe that's a thing, is that do brands need the loyalty of the hardcore whiskey consumer? Because don't get me wrong, we do. We still want your loyalty. I'm not trying to say that. I'm theorizing this out here. It's saying that if brands, or sorry, if people are using the brands to get what they want, maybe the brands can use them to get what they want. Because as soon as the whiskey geeks come in, they find something they like, it gets hype, people latch onto it, and then all of a sudden, you know, the OGs in it no longer want it, but then it just has this trickle effect with like now the masses are coming to it. I mean, it's not that. It's the early adoption curve. That's what this is at the end of the day. It's the early adoption curve where you see the people that are getting into it. They're the ones that right there at the top of the bell curve, or should I say the one at the very beginning. And then as soon as the bell curve keeps going, it's mass market and everything like that. So, and not to say that, you know, please do that to us. I don't care. Like, come bleed us dry as much as you want, because that would be great to be able to have. But I still think at the end of the day, there's a way that there's a balance and a harmony that comes between this, is that the whiskey geeks are always looking for the next great thing. And brands need the whiskey geeks to be able to basically show and prove that story. That's kind of what we're trying to do, is that even though I feel that we speak directly to the whiskey geek, we still have to infiltrate a lot of the whiskey geekdom and the territories that are out there, because I know that people that might listen to us, they might know us, but they probably haven't tried our product. And so we have to break that barrier. We have to get beyond that, and we've got to turn them into believers. We got to make them show that, you know, we can create and we can put out a great product, and hopefully that makes them brand loyal, even for a little bit. But it's something that will hopefully, you know, drive even more people, because what do you do with something that you love? You tell five or six people about it. And that's the one thing you want to be able to do, is kind of help build that word of mouth marketing engine.
Who's currently, you know, building brand loyalty and like building momentum, I guess. And, you know, I think of like our partners at Bardstown Bourbon Company, and like, they really, you know, haven't released any exclusively of their product yet, but they've built with the visit, you know, the restaurant, the whole hospitality, doing future barrel picks, doing cool collaborations, and like really just going really above and beyond in the hospitality side and connection side, have built like this pretty good following, and they haven't even really released their first product yet. You know, like I said, I think connection and experiences are really a new way of, because people want to be entertained, basically, you know, going on a whiskey trail or going to a wine tour or this or that. They like having fun things to do and memorable experiences. It's not just getting you the cheapest, you know, old foe handle and mixing it with 7-Up. You know, they really want to elevate, you know, their experience sides of things. And I think that's a new way that whiskey brands can help build loyalty as well, as through like an experiential type thing. And that's maybe where we've been probably lacking, not having a location and not having somewhere where people can connect our story to, you know, whereas they probably just think we're, you know, tater podcaster sourcing stuff and throwing it in a bottle and just sitting it on shelves and stuff. So it's not really, you know, it's hard to take us seriously because you don't have that, you know, that place where people can come and like be, sit and be with your brand.
So quarterly paloozas, is that what you need to throw?
Quarterly
paloozas. Yeah, it is.
Yes.
My party planning just can't handle that right now.
So let's get away from bourbon just for a little bit. What other brands, are there any other brands you guys are loyal to, and why? Are you like team Nike versus team Adidas? Are you Apple versus, there's just Apple.
We don't even have Apple, to talk about, for sure.
You know, Android users. Or, you know, Coke versus Pepsi, you know, are there
brands? As soon as I text somebody and see the green bubbles, like, this is going to be a quick conversation.
It's not actually a real friend. Yeah. I don't really need to know you. Yeah. What other brands are you guys loyal to, and why?
So I will say, at least for me, there's a few. I can name one off the top of my head, is when I think of anytime I buy appliances, I buy GE. And that's because my grandfather worked for General Electric for his entire life. My parents owned lots of stock in GE at one point. And so we have a brand loyalty to that. When I was, and then this is basically just going to having skin in the game. When I was in college, this is kind of funny. So when I was in college, I've told the story a few times, but me and my roommate, Chris, he was the lead social chair. I was like assistant to the social chair. And that basically meant that you threw the parties every single weekend. You're the ones talking to the sorority. You're setting it up. You're going to the party house hours beforehand, setting it up. You're doing all the booze runs. long story short, this was also the time when like bourbon was really getting us big. So at our house parties, we would always do massive bourbon and Coke, well, bourbon and Coke pitchers. It was basically a handle of Kentucky Tavern to 2 2-liters, and we went with Diet Pepsi. And I always made them buy Diet Pepsi because I owned stock in Pepsi at the time. And so whenever we'd go into CVS or whatever it was to go and buy everything, we would buy 2 liters of Pepsi. And nobody questioned it. But that was my brand loyalty moment back in college.
I hate to say it, this sounds lame, but I've been very loyal to High Noon.
let's go.
In the seltzer game. I don't know. The reason I liked it was it was like, all right, it's something refreshing. It's new. It's hip. The packaging's like cool. It speaks to like, you know, being kind of laid back, casual, and like the price points there. It's like perfectly, I don't know. It just fits like that. All right, I'm ready to chill. It's hot out, you know, whatnot. I don't know. I'm just really like everything about High Noon's like marketing, packaging, and like kind of that lifestyle. Whereas like a White Claw and a Truly is like more like, you're kind of like, it's, I don't know. High Noon's more of a sophisticated seltzer. It's the story I tell myself, though.
Sophisticated seltzer. If they take that and run with it as a marketing campaign, I'll make sure you get paid for it. The sophisticated seltzer.
It's like Sun Sips and whatever. But yeah, I mean, I've had New Balances for as long as I can remember. I don't know why. It's just, I thought they were like, cause everybody had Nike or Adidas or this or that. But I thought New Balance was like, just like, I'm an intelligent like runner, or, you know, I'm not like just, I hate the masses. Like I hate doing what the masses do. And like New Balance was just enough, not the masses. Like that's where I like really clung on to. And maybe that's why I like High Noons too, because everybody was doing White Claws and Trulys. And I was like,
it's funny you say that, like the not the masses, because I definitely have sort of that gravitational pull to something that I don't like, something that everybody else has. It kind of like back to college when everybody was getting those the razors. Remember when the razors were big, flip phones? Well, I was one of the first ones that had Windows OS on my phone, because if you remember back in college, when you lost your phone, what happened? You get on Facebook or something and be like, hey, I lost my phone. This is my new number or whatever. Like, text me your number because I lost it. Something like that. But I was one of the first ones having Windows Mobile OS, so I could actually back up my contacts to my computer and sync them just in case I ever lost my phone and just resync it. So that was one thing that, like, I always went against the masses with that. The other one is that I know there's in our Discord, there's a lot of people, we talk watches. Granted, I don't have the budget to buy a lot of watches, but I got one or two that I do like. And I've always been one of those people that I understand that like Rolex is the big name in watches, but when I started buying my first luxury watch, I didn't want a Rolex. I just felt that everybody had them. They're great watches. They look good. They hold their value better than anything else, but I just wanted something unique and was different. And so that's why I kind of looked at that as if where I'm going to spend my money. I just want something that kind of just speaks to me and not basically what everybody else has. But back to brand loyalty side, what about clothes? On clothes side, it took me a while to figure out stuff that actually fit me. So I'm a kind of big, like, banana
Pursuit t-shirts.
Bourbon Pursuit t-shirts. I can actually think my time in tech as getting all the free t-shirts and swag, because that's what we did. I started to figure out exactly what t-shirt fits me back. So go in my closet, my arsenal of tech t-shirts, and try the 30 different brands on and figure out which one I liked. And that's how we landed on the Bourbon Pursuit t-shirts that we have. But even with that, it's like finding the right jeans. As soon as you find one pair of jeans that fits you, you just keep buying the same pair of jeans over and over again, maybe in a different wash or something. Yeah. But it's something that, you know, you stick pretty loyal to that because it fits you.
I'm Levi's 512 Slim Fits. That's the only ones that'll fit me perfectly. And it took like 25 years to find them. And now I get like 4 pairs a year. And it is funny. Like I'm sitting here, I just started, there's this clothing line called Johnny O. And the way I got started was I played in a golf tournament and they gave us like a $200 gift card to Johnny O to like use, and I bought like a couple polos, and now I'm like, that's all I buy because it fits me good. It's like athletic but kind of surfy but kind of cool. Like it's comfortable but I look trendy, and it's like all it is all this marketing and brand loyalty is all the stories we tell ourselves in our heads about things, and it's like ridiculous why we do it, but it's the truth. You know, we're sitting here like we're creating a story about ourselves and an image about ourselves, and it's like, how can these products or whatever can complete that image for us?
I'm so glad that you found the perfect polo company to accompany your Levi's and New Balance, Dad.
That's right. I'm very trendy and cool, right?
Total dad mode right there. So I guess in summary, what have we learned after all this? Because I felt like this is a good brainstorming session as we kind of went through here to figure out how do you develop ways of brand loyalty? And I think we just narrowed it down on a few different things. One is you've got experience. Two, it's a product that fits a budget and a price and is good. And then three, I think it just comes down to story marketing. I think those are the three pillars of what it takes to be able to create maybe the perfect product or the perfect storm to be able to create that brand loyalty.
Yeah, because I think of as a whiskey consumer, and once you move past like Sazerac and whatnot, because you're never going to find them, and it's fantastic whiskey, but whatever. It was always when I was trying to find things or buy things, I was trying to tell myself, what is, you know, as Brian was talking about, what is like available, affordable, but people aren't like going crazy over, I can find it. Like, how can I be smarter than the most consumers as a whiskey? Like, what bottles can I buy and share with friends that people are going to think I'm smart?
I'm smart. That's one thing. It's like, when I see that bottle, this guy, he's got a pretty high GPA.
No, not like academically intelligent, because I'm far from that.
I'm sure his ACT scores were through the roof.
No, they weren't. I think I got like a 16 or something, sub 20s. I was a terrible student. Not smart, but like an intelligent whiskey buyer.
Just kidding.
That's the story I would tell myself, is like, okay, what are those brands that in the bottles that I could put on my shelf, share it with friends, and they're like, oh yeah, that is good. You know, it's not just Weller 107 or Babby 12 or whatever.
All right, guys. So if you are looking for, after this episode, any fashion tips, you can email ryan@pursuitspirits.com. But if you have podcast topics or questions for the guys outside of that, you can email podcast@pursuitspirits.com. Thanks again for listening to another exciting episode here at Behind the Pursuit. And we look forward to catching you on the next episode. Until next time, everybody, we'll see you all later.
Toodles.